our vanilla coffee.
There was a little noise going on there. Make sure they heard. Call this meeting of the Labor Finance and Labor and Industry Finance and Policy Committee order, and we do have a quorum now. Representative Jordan, our official minutes person, did you get a chance to check the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I have thoroughly examined the minutes from March 12th, and I urge members to approve these minutes and would make a motion to approve the minutes.
A motion has been made to approve the minutes from March 12th. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motions are approved. The minutes are approved. Members, we got two bills on the agenda today. The first bill is Representative Kozlowski's bill. And as she comes up, I'll make the motion that Representative Kozlowski's bill be re-referred to the General Register. Welcome to your committee. You want to explain what your bill does and do, I don't see an amendment, so explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. I'm really excited to be here. This is my first labor bill I'm presenting, and I'm glad that it's House File 4050, which is a bill to eliminate youth minimum wage, the small employer minimum wage, as well as the J visa holder minimum wage for hotels, motels, and resorts. All of these lower wages are actually set at $8.85 an hour as of January 1st, 2024. And this is $2 lower than the state minimum wage of $10.85. So Minnesota is a state that really values equal pay for equal work, and paying workers a lower minimum wage based solely on their age, the size of the employer's business, or the sector of their employer operates is really out of line with these values as Minnesotans. So in addition, House File 4050 would increase the cap on the minimum wage inflator from 2.5% to 5%. To ensure that adjustments to minimum wage keep pace with the cost of living that so many Minnesotans, too many, are feeling every single day, especially in high inflation years. So in each of the last 3 years, the inflation has been higher than the current 2.5 cap in the law. And there are actually 19 states plus DC that index minimum wage to inflation, and only 4 cap the inflation adjustment at all. And of those, Minnesota has the lowest cap at 2.5%. So a 5% cap would really put Minnesota on the high end of states that use a cap, while also erring on the side of caution and allowing more reasonable increases to the minimum wage in high inflation years. So the bottom line is really that this change would benefit working Minnesotans earning the minimum wage and those who really need it most to keep up with the increased cost of living due to inflation. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to my one and only testifier.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Josiah Moore, and I am the legislative coordinator at the Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 4050, which updates the state of Minnesota's minimum wage laws. This bill does two things. The first is that it removes 3 of the 4 lower minimum wages in Minnesota Statutes 177.24, the small employer minimum wage, the minimum wage for J visa holders, and the youth minimum wage. A full-time worker earning the regular minimum wage of $10.85 this year would have annual wages of $22,568. A full-time worker earning any of these lower minimum wages would only have annual wages of $18,408. This bill would eliminate that gap in wages by ensuring that working people in the state are not subject to a lower minimum wage based on their age, the sector they work in, or the size of their employer. The second thing this bill does, as the author explained well, is increase the cap on the annual increase of the minimum wage from 2.5% to 5%. To avoid overlapping too much, I'll just clarify that it is the Department of Labor and Industry who raises this wage every year and does the background analysis to calculate the amount of inflation to raise that to. And then if it is higher than 2.5%, we must only raise it 2.5%. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4050, and I will remain in committee if there are questions for the department.
Anybody else needs to testify on this bill from the audience? Seeing no one running down to the podium. Questions, discussion with members. Representative Schultz, it looks like you're moving your...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kozlowski, absent from having additional public testifiers here to add their voice to this bill, I'm seeking to hear from you where this concern is coming from. Is it a regional concern, statewide concern? You know, this does impact, specifically this bill goes quite towards smaller businesses, but I kind of wanted to hear your heart with this bill and kind of the direction and where this is coming from.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Schultz for the question. You know, as I mentioned in the opening remarks, that this is really based on the values of Minnesotans and building off of the work that we did last year. You know, in Minnesota, the cost of living and inflation means that we have over 550,000 Minnesotans who can't afford their rent on a daily basis, that we're hearing from the folks who are most impacted and the most lowest wage, and with our friends in labor, like the AFL-CIO, other unions, folks across the metro and greater Minnesota, black and brown indigenous workers who are predominantly women in these industries, who are currently being left behind as we're having this lower wage for three of the four categories. And it's really coming from making sure that people can afford their lives in Minnesota, I would say. We've also been doing a lot of outreach to the chambers, Mankato, to Brainerd, across the state, and many employers are actually already taking that proactive step because we're also in a workforce crisis with shortages, and so folks are raising their wages, and many, we heard, are actually already above the $10, which is, you know, we're seeking to raise this to $10.85. So we're really hearing from those folks who are at most impacted and really need us to take this step so that growing gap with inflation doesn't continue to increase.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kozlowski, and I appreciate hearing all of this information. So I guess first for you, Representative Kozlowski, and then potentially for the department as well. What is the data behind how many people are currently at this rate across the state of Minnesota?
Representative Kozlowski or Mr. Moore?
Thank you, Chair and Representative Schultz, for the question. We do have some data specific to the youth minimum wage. And we estimate that approximately 1,000 workers across the state earn somewhere between that youth minimum wage and that regular minimum wage, so are impacted by the lower wage existing. We also, our estimates also estimate that about $1 million in additional wages would go to workers if the youth minimum wage were removed. So that gets a sense of the scale. I don't have data today that get at the other two wages, the small employer minimum wage and the J visa wage. My understanding from talking to employer groups across the state is that those are less used than the youth minimum wage. So I would predict that the impact of removing those would be smaller than the figures that I just gave.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do, so number one, I'm gonna start on background here. Like, I started at the very bottom of the minimum wage in my first job outside of my family's business. And frankly, that was a tremendous experience. Super glad to have had that in my years when I was a teenager. And I will just say, you know, this is really focused on a, you know, relatively small group of people, yet incredibly important to our economy. And so that's why that data is super helpful. So thank you for the, you know, approximately 1,000 people. And I would love to hear more about whether it's the folks working in hospitality or exactly what that data is. So Representative Kozlowski, do you have more data in regards to whom else this would impact? Sorry about that, Mr. Chair. Just the specifics as much as possible, if you have data as to whom else or the total number of people impacted.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Schultz. And I would say that we don't have that specific data at hand. You know, looking at in terms of, as I mentioned, the workers who are most impacted, and it's youth. But again, it's also the small employer minimum wage, and it's the J-1 visa worker. So that's, you know, people who are working up in the North Shore at our hotels seasonally, right? They're in our private businesses in Minnesota, but they're also on our tribal nations. We also have many people who are Black, Brown, Indigenous, and women. And I did have some data here that, you know, I think it's really important to ground this, that in raising the minimum wage is one of the best tools that we have to make sure that there's pay equity and good economic justice for people. The folks who would be most lifted are, for example, Latino workers, who constitute about 20% of workers in the state that boost baseline wages, but they would be 40% of the people across that would experience some wage hikes. We also know that Black workers are affected and face some of the highest rates of wage theft and are at the lowest in our minimum wages right now. So, you know, that comes from Rutgers University and U.S. Census data and more that we could certainly dig into and get back to you on the specifics of here in Minnesota.
Representative Schultz, a question for you when you talk about you started at minimum wage. Curious, I think my first job was $1.67 an hour was the minimum wage. I was going to ask you, what was the minimum wage when you were first hired?
Great question, Mr. Chair. I believe, and now I'm questioning myself, it was either $5.15 or $5.85, one of those two. It was probably right in that period. Maybe the first year it was $5.15 and the next year it was $5.85. So that was the answer for me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you. So, Representative Kozlowski, you and I, we both appreciate the North Shore resort community, the hospitality industry, the immense experience that young people get to have. And yet, even in your own community, one that you and I both spent time in together, we see that there are numerous jobs available at, frankly, double what the current minimum wage is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as it relates to this bill, I think that originally the intention of this language and the reason why current state law is as it is to ensure that people are gaining that experience, they're getting that job training, they're getting the tools and the new experiences to be successful in those next jobs. Mm-hmm. And yet, even in your own community, there's many opportunities that are double what our current minimum wage is. So I guess that's my just open question. I'm not sure that I totally understand it yet. We need to make sure that we're creating those opportunities and ensuring the ability to have those great resorts and places, restaurants and otherwise, that are training our youth. And we certainly wouldn't want to work against those opportunities as they exist today.
And Representative Kozlowski, before this gets to the floor, you might want to find the information of the questions that were asked. And so Representative Kozlowski, you want to respond to his question?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Chair Hansen, or not Hansen, Nelson, and Representative Schultz. You know, we did talk with Hospitality Minnesota. As I mentioned, we engaged our business communities. And you're right that for a smaller amount of people who would be impacted by raising the minimum wage and that floor is maybe a small number, but for the people who, for those, you know, estimated 58 cents if they had gotten that 5% inflationary cap versus 2.5, those cents and those pennies make a big, big impact. That right now, if you're going to afford a house in Duluth or in the metro or in greater Minnesota, you have to work 91 hours a week. That is insane. And that is unacceptable in a state where we're saying that we're not going to leave anybody behind. And so whether the number is small or large, we're here to say that we need to make sure that everybody is uplifted and brought into those opportunities. And for many people, that is the job that they continue in. And so it's not just for youth. And it also has downward pressure for adults who are working in those industry. If people are able to just skirt and pay $2 less for a youth worker, instead of paying everybody a meaningful wage that they can buy groceries and afford their lives and raise their kids and live their fullest potential.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first minimum wage was like under $2 an hour as well. So these younger fellers didn't experience the brutalness that we did. I think it was like $1.65, to be honest. Representative Kozlowski and or perhaps the Department of Labor, if you go from 2.5%, and I understand inflation's high now, and perhaps that's what this is about, is trying to offset all this inflation that's been created both on the federal and local levels. But if you do it at 5%, that compounds year over year over year. And in doing so, will it outpace the current affordability for any small businesses? And you mentioned it was 1,000 people that you have the data on, but it also adds about $1 million of revenue or wage-wise. But do you foresee that if you keep adding 5% over years, especially as inflation begins to come down, which it is cyclical, eventually it should, then you would be outpacing when it's going down? Because I doubt you'd ever go down. Would you? Perhaps you can answer that question.
Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. The law does not allow DLI to adjust down. It only allows us to adjust up.
And Mr. Moore, I think you said in your testimony that you can figure out what it is. It's not 5% every year. You figure out what the inflation is, and that's what you adjust it at. The 5% is just a cap.
That's correct. The 5% would be the cap. So in a year where there was 6% inflation under this new bill, we would be limited to raising it to 5%. However, there would still be plenty of years. For example, 2019, inflation was only 2%. 2020, it was 1.4%. In 2021, it was 0.77%. So in those low inflation years, DLI would still reduce it by whatever the actual amount of inflation was. We wouldn't be allowed to jump up to that 5%.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a couple of things. My daughter works at a very, very small business, 5-6 employees. I believe they started her at $12 an hour. She could clearly go work at our largest retailer that has a bullseye on it, so not to say any names, and make quite a bit more money, but she really likes this small company. But when she started, she had no work experience whatsoever. If they had to pay that much more, which they didn't even pay minimum wage, they was 11 or 12 bucks an hour at the time, but why would they not just hire an adult that has work experience, proves that they can show up on time, all those things, rather than give these young people the skills they need to learn as they grow up? And you talk about not being able to pay bills or afford housing and all that. She didn't take this job because she has a mortgage payment or rent payment to make. She has two parents that take care of that. But she needed her spending money. And she particularly really likes where she works. So are we not going to adversely affect some of those positions in the effort of, I mean, we're talking about from the numbers that were given, 1,000 people. And I not that I don't think that everybody should make more if they can, but there's at what point will this have a negative impact to either one of them?
Mr. Moore, yeah, I'm kind of seeing which one is that.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question once again. One thing I would point to is that this bill leaves the training wage in place. The training wage is on, I can point to the line of the bill, that is on 2.23. This leaves that in place. So there is still something in state law here that allows this lower wage to exist for workers under the age of 20 in the first 90 days of employment. That could help offset some of the concerns about getting youth into the workplace at a small business that are being expressed.
Representative Mecklen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Where I find this to be concerning is, and I think everybody over there will agree with me, so a really good friend of mine just graduated from tech school for auto mechanics through the apprenticeship program, and one of his classmates actually quit because he can make more at McDonald's. So how many of these people are you driving away because McDonald's in our little town, which is an individually owned one, starts at $20 an hour? And that's more than they would make at the Ford dealership as a union mechanic right off the bat or during that training period. So he chose to make more money now rather than go through the schooling, which I would think would have a negative impact for organized labor. But and I talked to several fast food restaurant owners last night in preparation for this, and the lowest I could find was 15. And in fact, one of them owns convenience stores as well. There's an interesting story. I don't know if you've ever heard of the gentleman. His name is Dave Yamaguchi. He started as a Super America cashier. He's 69 years old. You can look on his LinkedIn profile. He worked his way to the top at Super America with no zero education. He was just very ambitious. He didn't need laws like this. He literally was making six figures very quickly. And then the neatest thing happened. Holiday companies came in and stole him away. And now he was approaching seven figures. And he's to this day still at Holiday. None of this was needed because he had a drive and inspiration. He wanted to do more and not just be content, which if these really small employers, especially entrepreneurs who are just starting out, if you're going to handicap them on this and they don't have the ability to grow and build that nest egg so they can build their business and pay more, how many of those will never even succeed off the beginning when we give them all these entrepreneurial grants out? We keep seeing this over and over and over again, all this stuff geared towards our small business. And to me, it really, if you can answer that, that'd be great. But this really looks like this is a way of offsetting and covering for all the inflation we've caused, all the new taxation, all the revenue. And not only that, based on your thing, maybe my question is this. If there's $1 million in additional wages on just these 1,000 people, how much does the Department of Revenue benefit between work comp, unemployment insurance, State Department of Revenue? How much of that do they collect by all these new revenue versus what do the people actually are left with by the time you take all the deductions out?
Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have those figures today. I could look into having our stats team try those calculations and try to follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would appreciate that because it seems to me there's a couple of very notorious economists out there. How many hours will it take you to buy the same thing? You keep raising minimum wage, cost of all products go up. As cost of products go up, Department of Revenue sales tax proceeds go up. Social Security withholdings go up. Everything goes up. But at the end of the day, that person still has to work 2.4 hours to buy that one unique product, whether it's a pizza or what have you. They didn't actually gain anything. So I caution you on continuously doing this because it's driving more inflation because the price of all our products and goods will go up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's your question there. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Koslowski, for bringing this bill. As somebody who knows what it's like to bring a bill that's about closing a loophole that shouldn't be there, that's affecting maybe not the majority of workers, but it is affecting workers, I just really want to thank you for that. I think, and I have a question, but I do think when we think about exclusions, right, when we talk about youth workers, J-1 workers, folks at small businesses, it is actually important that we're doing this, that we're bringing them up to the same level, and that we don't just leave folks behind because it's not very many people. It's also really important, and I think you guys across the aisle make the point, we should do this now. If we're at a place where most wages are above this at this point, it actually, those businesses probably won't feel that effect. I think that brings a bigger question of, is our minimum wage keeping up with where people need to live? But the question I have, or where people need to live in Minnesota, mm-hmm. The question I have is, are sort of folks in these areas, particularly youth or J-1 visa holders, are they doing different jobs than folks who are making the state minimum wage?
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Greenman for the question and the comments. And I think that's fundamentally what this bill is saying, is that equal pay for equal work. Now, in the sense for youth workers, as was brought up, and I will just point out that I think it's great that it was called out, the high wages. I started out, my first job was at McDonald's, making about also $5.50 an hour. In most cases, except for in the youth, there are some exceptions, it's true. But people are doing the same work and performing the same labor and yet being paid less. And that is very discriminatory and unfair. And in the case of hiring 16-year-olds to perform the same job as adults, that actually incentivizes employers to continue to hire to get rid of youth if they can pay youth at a lower rate. And so it reinforces this, and there's a lot of claims that, you know, this is going to negatively impact youth work and youth opportunities as was raised, but research actually shows that higher minimum wages have no meaningful impact on teen employment or unemployment for folks who were raising the floor for. And so even better the case to be able to do that. Now, we did hear in reaching out to Hospitality Minnesota, to the chambers, to folks across the state that that training wage aspect was the thing that is really important, and that is for youth all the way up to the age of 20 would be able to, for the first 90 days, continue at that 885. And so I think that gets at, you know, being able to get in the door, be able to get trained, and to get into those good opportunities. But Representative Greenman, to your question, no, if you're performing the exact same work, you should be paid the exact same.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kozlowski. I think that that just seems consistent with how most of our laws should work, which is our laws should work, which is you shouldn't be paid differently based on who you are, right? You should be paid for the job and the work you're doing. I think, you know, a couple of years ago, we saw a bipartisan effort to eliminate the exclusion of young folks from being able to get unemployment insurance. And it was a bipartisan vote. And a lot of the reason we heard was that young folks are actually not just, you know, this isn't just some whim, right? They're working over the summer, they're supporting their families. And just like every other worker, they are doing that work and should have the, they should have the security of unemployment insurance. Mm-hmm. I don't see why this is any different. I don't think that this feels like it's a partisan issue. I feel like this is something that we should all be able to get behind. And it is just like you said, it's just raising the floor just a little bit. And again, this feels like the right time to do it. If we're at a point where the labor market's tight and wages are higher, hopefully we are here for the rest of our lives and the rest of our governing. But if we're not, this is really, really important. So I really appreciate you doing this work. I appreciate the Department of Labor for also working on it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Representative Schultz,
Thank you. Just in this last little bit between Representative Greenman and Representative Kozlowski, it struck me just a little bit like at the same time, I think many, especially this bill for the record is about small employers, right? Small businesses, like pretty much almost darn near mom and pop shops. That's what this bill is about. It's not about the big businesses. That's already taken care of in law. And the reason I bring that up for the purposes of this last little discussion is there is a cost, and we're hearing this across the board workforce-wise in Minnesota, there's a cost for a business to transition an employee away and in, and there's a larger cost to just finding the next worker that probably exceeds that which is found within, you know, the gap in this bill or the cap that exists currently in law. It's a more expensive venture for a business for a small business, a mom and pop shop. It's more expensive for them to find a new employee than it is for them to increase the wages for their youth worker, for their young worker. And I come from this background, right? My family business is a mom and pop shop, and we pride ourselves on finding the up and comers in the local public school and bringing them in, bringing a little bit of new life experience for them, and then they go off to do really incredible things. One recent example is someone is now probably making close to $100,000 a year working in a clean energy company, of all things, right? In our central Minnesota community. But it was an example of success where frankly, we're absolutely going to do in our small business what we can to ensure that we're able to keep that young person as they're learning, number one, how the skills and the tools of the trade, but also once they learn those things, that's of immense value to that small business. And so, that's why I think that we need to ensure that we're seeing this for what it is, that this is really going after the smallest mom and pop shops in our state. So I appreciate the dialogue. And I, like Representative Greenman, Representative Kozlowski, you know, really appreciate your comments and concerns on this. Thank you.
Representative Donald, did you want to close that? Did you have your hand up? I couldn't tell over there.
Mr. Chairman, well, my colleagues said it really best, so there's no need to repeat what they have to say. Since you gave me the opportunity, I'll just close in this saying, as a mom-and-pop business, my photo studio hiring high school students and young adults for 30 years, we never ever paid minimum wage. It was always, if we wanted a good employee, we better compete with our McDonald's and pizza places and coffee shops around McDonald's competing with McDonald's, with the surrounding neighborhoods. But the problem with the bill, as I see it, or the whole premise of the minimum wage, especially for businesses that are very concerned about every penny, so you are leaving people behind when government interferes and increases the minimum wage. The businesses are left behind. The mom-and-pop businesses aren't able to necessarily hire the quantity of employees perhaps they need, and or they're increasing the prices. So as inflation rises with minimum wage, it's cyclical. So you get a little pennies will increase in your minimum wage, so too dimes and nickels will increase in the cost of the goods. So you'll never get ahead. So it's like a gerbil on the treadmill. As government continues to interfere and mandate and try to put a kink into the free market system, it interferes in it and causes all things to raise the cost. So there's never a level that you can really catch up. For those businesses that are paying minimum wage, I don't know which ones are. I'd like to see that data. I think that'd be important data and see what kind of folks are entering that field. Usually they're young adults, teenagers starting out. We've done so much greatness in the state of Minnesota to help lift people up by their bootstraps and bring them out of poverty, to increase their education. We're giving free and colleges to certain folks that are, $80,000 and less. We've worked so hard to lift people out of poverty and to increase and improve the quality of their life that it diminishes them in the beginning when they're starting at a lower wage and trying to work their way up to improve their quality of life. The statistics, Representative Kozlowski, just don't show that minimum wage, and especially for small employees, is really necessary because of the free market is already pushing that. Again, I don't know one employee in my Wright County that pays a minimum wage. And if they did, they're probably not having any workers come to their door. So it interferes with it, and with your bill keeping up with inflation, that'll just increase the cost of everything. My wife went to Costco and Trader Joe's yesterday, and when she told me the bill, oh my gosh, prices just keep on going up and up and up and up. It's scary, from toilet paper to pizzas to your beers. At what point do we get out of the way and let the free market take over? But the more government interferes is the increase. The inflation causes the increase of the inflation, not to mention our $33 trillion in debt certainly isn't helping as well with inflation. So I think my colleague said it best as well. The premise, though, Representative Kozlowski, is honorable to help all those folks who are starting out in the job market. But for that reason, I can't support the bill.
So with that, no further questions that I can see. I'll renew my motion that House File 4050 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. The bill's on its way. The next bill we have on our agenda is Representative Wolgamott's House File 3980. And if he's going up there, again, I'll make the motion that House File 3980 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Representative Wolgamott, if you want to explain your bill.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Lead McDonald, and members of our committee for the opportunity to present House File 3980, which is the Department of Labor and Industry's technical policy bill for apprenticeships. A little bit of background on registered apprenticeships, Mr. Chair and committee members. Registered apprenticeship is a time-tested employee training system that combines job-related classroom instruction with structured on-the-job learning and prepares Minnesota workers to compete in the global economy. As part of a registered apprenticeship program, apprentices are paid a progressive wage schedule for their on-the-job learning and are supervised by a journey worker while on a work site. At the completion of their program, apprentices earn a nationally recognized credential for their specific occupation. Minnesota has over 11,000 active registered apprentices in the state across more than 200 programs. Approximately 90% of these apprentices participate in a program within the building and construction trades. However, Minnesota has seen recent growth in programs outside of this industry, including healthcare, advanced manufacturing, transportation, childcare, and K-12 education. Registered apprenticeship has a long history in the building and construction trades, and this model has led to skilled tradesmen and women who earn good wages and benefits. Because of this success, other industries, including healthcare, advanced manufacturing, transportation, childcare, K-12 education, have begun to realize the benefits of registered apprenticeship. However, some current apprenticeship laws create barriers for these other industries to start a registered apprenticeship program. That's what this bill aims to address. That's why we're bringing forward House File 3980. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have with me a testifier, Aaron Larson, who is the Director for Apprenticeship Minnesota, to provide testimony and answer any questions that you or other members of the committee may have regarding House File 3980. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Aaron Larson, and I am the Apprenticeship Director at the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 3980, the department's apprenticeship policy bill. The bill is the result of extensive engagement with stakeholders, including the Apprenticeship Advisory Board, and would update Minnesota's apprenticeship statutes and allow for broader participation in registered programs. Additionally, this legislation would better align Minnesota's apprenticeship program with federal apprenticeship requirements. Specifically, some of the changes within the proposal include the use of other terms besides journey worker that may be used in industries outside of the building and construction trades. For example, registered apprenticeship programs in childcare and education often refer to their journey workers as mentors. This updated language in Section 3 is directly from the federal apprenticeship regulations and would not impact any journey worker requirements outlined in other statutes for licensed trades. A less restrictive ratio is also included as part of the proposal, and this requirement is for the supervision of apprentices in programs outside the building and construction trades or other hazardous occupations. There's also a proposal to extend and prorate the probationary period for apprentices, and the proposal includes additional clarification around the apprenticeship program deregistration process. Other changes in the proposal align protected classes to state and federal laws or are purely technical in nature, such as deleting outdated references or correcting terminology. The less restrictive ratio requirement in Section 11 of the bill would only apply to those programs outside of the building and construction trades or other hazardous occupations. The ratio requirements for apprenticeship supervision in the building and construction trades would remain unchanged, where the ratio, absent of a collective bargaining agreement, is one to apprentice to one journey worker for the first apprentice, and then one apprentice to three journey workers thereafter. Prospective sponsors from outside the building and construction trades have indicated the current one-to-one, one-to-three ratio requirement is not reasonable for programs in industries such as information technology, healthcare, or education, and has prevented some employers from registering a program. For example, many information technology companies would not have seven journey workers on staff to supervise three apprentices within a program. Additionally, these apprentices would not encounter the same types of hazards found on the construction site. The proposed change to the probationary period in Section 13 of the bill extends the probationary period for an apprentice from 500 hours to 1 year or 25% of the program length, whichever is shorter. This proposed change matches the federal language for the probationary period of apprentices and was a recommended change from existing registered apprenticeship programs. The proposed changes to the deregistration process in sections 19 to 23 of the bill align the process to other state and federal requirements. Though the apprenticeship division at DLI works closely with programs to provide technical assistance, there are rare occasions where programs must be deregistered, and these proposed changes provide clarity on that process for both DLI and registered apprenticeship programs. In summary, we believe these changes are reasonable and necessary to continue to grow registered apprenticeship in Minnesota, and we appreciate your consideration on House File 3980, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions? Before I go to that, is there anybody else in the audience that needs to speak on this bill? I see no one. Questions? Representative Mecklen, you got your eyebrows raised. I don't know if that's the signal that you want to ask a question.
That's a fellow trade guy talk, yeah. Mr. Chair. I do have a question. How was it deemed that nursing is not hazardous? I mean, we have sharps, we have needles, we have biohazards, we have a patient involved that, if not well trained, could affect that person. Is it not? I mean, we heard in this very committee a bill just recently on nursing and how dangerous it can be. How did we get to the point, or how did the department get to the decision that hazardous occupation would not include nursing?
Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. So hazardous occupations is outlined in statute. We're taking the statute language around what hazardous occupations are and applying that to that similar definition. So it's taken from statute.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just for clarification, you currently have to have 3 journeymen to 1 apprentice. Is that correct?
Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. So for the first apprentice, you have 1 journey worker. For thereafter, it's 1 apprentice to 3 journey workers.
Representative Mecklen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So if it's 1-to-1 is okay for the first, why do you need 3 additional journeymen for 1 additional apprentice? Like if it was safe enough for 1-to-1, if you put them in 2 separate rooms, they could be 1-to-1 if they were working on maybe from 2 different companies. But the minute you put them all in 1 room, then you'd have to have 2 more journeymen. Is that correct?
Director, I think the way this works is the first one, it's 1-to-1, so you have to have a journeyman on the job site to have an apprentice. After that, that journeyman, if you have more journeymen, they can actually have 3 apprentices working with 1 journeyman going above that one. You know, so you have 2 journeymen, you could have 3 apprentices working, or is it 4?
4.
Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the first apprentice and first journey worker, yes. So then after, if you want to have a second apprentice, you would have 4 journey workers, yes. Right. I think I did my math.
Okay. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, so I just wanted clarification on that part, because if it's safe to have 1-to-1, going to 2, why do you need 4 journeymen? I mean, how why wouldn't you have to have 3 for when you have 1? Because wouldn't the whole intent be to make sure that 1 is being well watched and well trained? But it's okay if it's only 1, but if it's 2, then we have to have 4. Is that my understanding of this? Maybe perhaps the author of the bill can answer this.
Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the proposal, the 1-to-1 would apply to those non-hazardous occupations. So if you're thinking about healthcare, where maybe there's just 1 apprentice in a room and they're supervised by 1 person, or the information technology example that I provided, those work sites are very different than an active construction site. So if I have 1 new person working in an IT company and I add in a couple new other people, those hazards aren't quite the same as if I'm on an active construction site. So taking that out in terms of supervision, if I have experienced tradespeople who are overseeing new people on the work site, that supervision with those experienced people increases the safety of everyone.
Representative, any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schultz.
Yeah, beyond the building and construction trades, what other industries does this impact?
Director.
Sure. So we have programs in information technology, education, in the public sector, healthcare, agriculture, transportation.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you. So this impacts each of those, but differently. So is that correct? Like the ratios are not the same for each one of those?
Director.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So for those programs outside of the building and construction trades, they would all start at a one-to-one ratio.
Representative Phillips?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. In law, in those other industries outside of the building and construction trades, do they have any of those specific apprenticeship requirements?
Director?
Thank you for the question. So this would be the law for the requirement for those.
Okay. So currently there is nothing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently there's nothing in statute that outlines those specific industries that this bill touches, based on what you said.
Director?
So anybody that has, or any entity that has a registered apprenticeship program, regardless of the industry, would be required to meet this one-to-one, one-to-three mm-hmm. ratio. So existing programs in transportation, existing programs in information technology currently have that one-to-one, one-to-three ratio. Maybe I'm not understanding the question. I'm sorry.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a general question, and maybe best for the author of the bill. Are there other states that have adopted this same statute? A second part to that question would be, have they seen any increased costs to doing business based upon those apprenticeship requirements?
Representative Mogamot, or he was asking you, but.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the questions, Representative Schultz. I believe that Director Larson can provide the best insight on this.
Director?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So Minnesota is a state apprenticeship agency, meaning the Office of Apprenticeship at the U.S. Department of Labor has delegated or deputized us to administer the apprenticeship program. There are other states where the U.S. Department of Labor does that directly within states. So states have different ratio requirements that align to their local work environments and their labor regulations. So that's one of the beauties, I guess, of being a state apprenticeship agency, is that we have that local control to decide that. So there are some states that may have lower ratios. There are also other states that have higher ratios than our current requirement in statute.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask as precise a question as possible. How will we compare with the immediate states around us on these ratios?
Sure.
Director.
Thank you. So thank you for the question. So, for example, North Dakota and South Dakota are operated under the U.S. Department of Labor, and I believe they implement a one-to-one ratio. I'd have to go back and confirm that, but that's my understanding. So ours is higher than theirs. We also have different work environments than those two states, and different labor regulations that impact those apprenticeship programs.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any other comment on the other states, Iowa, Wisconsin, and how they attack this?
Director.
Thank you for the question. I don't have that data with me. I would have to go back and look at it. New York, for example, though not adjacent, has a 4-to-1 ratio, so 4 journey workers for each apprentice on the work site, so higher.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, good to have this information. Let's take New York for an example. Have they seen, especially in building and construction, have they seen increased costs to construction based around their apprenticeship requirements, having, like you said, 4-to-1 or 1-to-4 standard?
Director?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I don't have current data with me on New York's apprenticeship program costs, so I can check into that, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for indulging me, as always. I think that those are important pieces of information for us, especially as it relates to housing, concerns for building costs today. We don't want Minnesota to continue to be the most expensive place to build and to construct, and we want to focus upon those things that'll, make life more affordable, which is, I guess, in essence, the concern that I share with this bill is I think that this is going to add cost, but I'm certainly open to information if we have information to the contrary, or if you find information to the contrary from a place like New York.
Any further questions? Representative McDonald.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a question, Representative Wolgamott, regarding, it's a quick question too, I believe, 1.18 to 1.21 of the bill, just with those additional requirements, has there been any evidence that anyone was refused an apprenticeship based on our old law.
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Representative McDonald. I think that Director Larson can best answer this question.
Director.
Thank you. Representative, thank you for the question. Could you repeat the line numbers, please?
1.18 to 1.21. In particular, yeah, I guess all of them, actually.
Yes. So, yes, our office receives complaints from apprentices who indicate that they have been discriminated against within their apprenticeship program.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Based on the old law, or have you had any on the what would be the new language in the new law?
So,
Director.
Thank you. So based on the old law, the language that's added within 1.8 to 1.21 aligns to our federal requirements and our additions based on the language that we're required as a state apprenticeship agency to include within our apprenticeship laws.
So, Director, this is to comply with the federal requirements.
Correct.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lastly, then, because you do receive complaints for that, I'd be curious to know some of that data as how many, just on an annual basis of the reporting on discrimination on those criteria.
Director.
Sure, thank you. Thank you for the question. So I can get you the very specific data, but generally we receive 1 to 3 complaints per year.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That's all. You don't have to send me that.
Sure.
Take your word for that. Thank you.
It would be helpful to send it to Representative Wolgamott so that when he gets, if he gets these answer questions, when this is on the floor, he can answer them. So.
Oh, yeah. We'll ask him on the floor.
Seeing no further questions, I'll renew my motion that House File 3980 be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The bill's on its way. And members, with that, we have no further business in front of us. We are adjourned.